Have you seen those commercials? I don't even remember if it's Office Max or Staples or what it is, but it's the easy button, right? And anytime you need a task done, anytime you need a decision made, anytime you need a problem solved, what do? You just go hit the easy button and the easy button solves it for you. Well, many of you have become your company's easy button. And anytime someone has a question, anytime someone has a problem, anytime someone needs to make a decision, well, they could go about making it on their own, or they could just hit the easy button and the easy button solves it for them. I bet you right now some of you feel very convicted. I can feel convicted because in many ways, it strokes my ego to be the easy button, because when I step into the role of Chief Easy Button, it means that I get to be the superhero. Well, hey there. If we have not yet met, my name is Alex Judd. I'm the founder of Path for Growth, and this is the Path for Growth podcast. Now, as a business, we exist to help impact-driven leaders step into who they were created to be so that others benefit and God is glorified. And this podcast is just another iteration of how that mission comes to life. Have you ever felt stuck? Have you ever felt like you reach a stage or status where you've stopped moving forward? You've lost momentum. You find yourself in a rut and you feel like all the things that used to be working, that used to be helping you propel your business and move things forward in your life, they just don't work anymore. Well, I think that that's actually part of the human experience, right? We go through stages and we go through seasons where, quite frankly, we just feel stuck. And it's not necessarily bad to get stuck. What gets really toxic and unhealthy and also unhelpful is not when we get stuck, but rather when we stay stuck. And certainly, as with anything in life, the negative results of staying stuck are just magnified if you are in a position of leadership. And so what I wanted to walk through today is just five things that we often see keep CEOs stuck. The bread and butter of our business is that we offer one-on-one coaching for CEOs or leaders that run a business. And so often we get to coincide with people that are focused on moving their business forward. And one of the things that we often see is, man, there's a series of things that keep leaders stuck. And if they can overcome or conquer or take action to remove these barriers, well, then they start to move forward personally. And obviously that personal momentum has ramifications for the momentum and forward motion of their business. And so the way that we're going to walk through this content is we're going to walk through the five things that keep CEOs stuck, and then we're just going to focus on practical actions that you can take to overcome these barriers if you are facing them. And so let's start with number one. The first thing that keeps CEOs stuck is that they are being held hostage by their team. Are you being held hostage by your team? Now, obviously, you hear that question and you say, okay, well, that sounds a little bit dramatic. No, my hands aren't tied. My mouth isn't taped. I'm not being held hostage by my team. But don't think so fast, because so often I coincide with leaders, and by title, they are the CEO, and they in name have authority to be able to move forward, to be able to take actions, to be able to make decisions. But in reality, they feel like their hands are tied. And the reason why they feel like their hands are tied is because they are constrained by the expectations or rules or boundaries that have been created within the culture of their team. And so let me ask you a few questions to help you identify if this might be you. Are there people on your team who consistently underperform, but you can't confront, course correct, or terminate because you don't have any structure for holding them accountable? Well, if so, then you are being held hostage. Let's go after another one. Are there people on your team who don't align with your desired culture or values, and yet you don't say anything because you know it's going to hinder performance or it's going to ruffle people's feathers and make people upset? Here's another one. Are you afraid to confront specific individuals on the team about the way they act, the way they speak, or maybe the way they approach their job because they've got big personalities, and if you confront that big personality, it's really going to upset them and by extension have ramifications for the rest of their business? Well, if your answer to any of those questions is yes, then you are being held hostage by your team, because what you're telling me by saying yes to those questions is, I know the actions that are right. I know what I need to do in order to move forward. I know the decision that I'm supposed to make, but I feel like I can't make it. And if that's the case, then no wonder you're stuck, because you've allowed yourself to get into a position where you have the title of leader, but you have not taken the responsibility of leading. And so the bad news is that you put yourself in this position. The good news is that you put yourself in this position. And so you're the reason why you're stuck, but that also means that you are the solution to getting unstuck. And so if you are in this position where you feel like, man, I know what the right thing to do is, I feel like I just can't do that thing. Well, here's the action that you need to take. You got to have a line in the sand moment. And the first line in the sand moment has to be with yourself, because here's the deal. If you're going to start doing new things to get new results, the thing that you're going to have to cultivate inside yourself, hopefully in the presence of other people, maybe it's a coach, maybe it's a counselor, maybe it's a pastor, you have to develop in yourself a sense of resolve and conviction that this new direction, this new action is the right thing to do. Because the action that you consistently believe in is the action you will consistently take. And so you've got to cultivate in yourself a belief that, okay, this is the right thing to do. You've got to have a sense of conviction. You got to have a sense of confidence, because if there's any doubt or wavering within you, you're going to deviate to the path of least resistance. So you got to have that line in the sand meeting with yourself. And then you've got to have a line in the sand meeting with your team. And my recommendation would be to start with culture. In so many ways, everything rises and falls on culture. So the first standard that you want to establish a line in the sand around is around your mission and your values for the business. And so it can be so easy to come into a meeting like this, brash and bombastic, telling people this is how it's going to be. And I would encourage you not to approach this meeting in that way. Rather, I would encourage you to approach this meeting starting with an apology. And here's what I mean by that. I want you to start this meeting by saying, hey, I want to let y'all know I'm sorry. I have tolerated a culture in this business for a while now that I don't actually like. And I've allowed us to contribute to creating a workplace that I don't think is actually in our best interest. And there are certain values that I have and that we say we have as a company that I've allowed us to deviate from or to even just not be committed to at all. And that's on me. I am the leader of this business, and therefore I am responsible for allowing that culture, number one, to be initiated, but then number two, to be sustained. And so for that, I want to say sorry. So you start with an apology, and then you move to casting vision for the new direction. You just say, but I want you to know that for me personally, this is a line in the sand moment. And we want different results than this for our company, for our culture, for our performance. We think it's in everyone's best interest that we actually live by these values. And so starting today, we're drawing a line in the sand and we're going to say we're going to do new things to get new results. And so I just want to let you know that, like, I'm going to do my job and I'm not going to tolerate this anymore in myself or in anyone else. Does that mean I'm asking you to be perfect as it relates to these values? Of course not. And most of you are actually doing a really great job. So no, I'm not asking you to be perfect, but what I am asking you to be is committed. I want you to be committed to never-ending improvement. I want you to be committed to owning mistakes, and I want you to be committed to growing with us in the area of these values, because we are going to hold each other accountable to these values, because these values are who we are. To go back to Seth Godin's line, people like us do things like this. And so what did you do in that line in the SAM meeting? Well, you said, hey, I'm sorry because I had a standard that I wasn't holding myself or our team to. But I want to let you know that I am reaffirming the standard and be really clear about what that standard is and your core values. And we are going to hold each other accountable to that standard. We're not going to be perfect on it, but we are going to be committed to it. Man, I will tell you, the right people will have so much respect for that act of decisive leadership. And what you're going to find out of that meeting, I've never seen a leader properly and proactively engage with a meeting like that, that they didn't almost immediately have stress relieved from them. Not because everything became easy. Almost always when you have a meeting like that, it means that some people are likely going to have to be confronted or even terminated. So it wasn't just that it was easy. It was just, man, I was stuck And that was awful because we stopped making progress and I was feeling like I was abdicating my responsibility. But now we're not stuck. Now it even may be hard action. It may be difficult and challenging and messy action, but at least it's action and at least we're moving forward. And so if you're feeling like you are held hostage by your team or by your business, the action is take responsibility, apologize for tolerating an incorrect standard, and then establish the new standard and challenge everyone to commit to it. Okay, let's move on to the second thing that keeps CEOs stuck. You aren't the CEO, you're actually the CEB. Now, once again, we're referring to titles here. What does CEO stand for? It stands for Chief Executive Officer. And what does CEB stand for? Well, there's too many people that wear the title of CEO, and in reality, they are operating as the Chief Easy Button. Have you seen those commercials? I don't even remember if it's Office Max or Staples or what it is, but it's the easy button, right? And anytime you need a task done, anytime you need a decision made, anytime you need a problem solved, what do? You just go hit the easy button and the easy button solves it for you. Well, many of you have become your company's easy button. And anytime someone has a question, anytime someone has a problem, anytime someone needs to make a decision, well, they could go about making it on their own, or they could just hit the easy button and the easy button solves it for them. I bet you right now, some of you feel very convicted. I can feel convicted because in many ways, it strokes my ego to be the easy button. Because when I step into the role of Chief Easy Button, it means that I get to be the superhero. I get to have the answers. I get to solve the problems. I get to make the decisions. And that feels great for my ego. However, it disempowers the team and it actually operates against my best interest. And so what we need to recognize is that me being the chief easy button for my organization is not actually in their best interest or my best interest. And if we have opted in for a season of playing that role, no wonder we're stuck. Because if you sign up for playing the role of chief easy button, it will work for a little while, but eventually you'll realize, man, my actual role is not chief easy button, it's CEO. And so I'm supposed to focus on things like vision and culture and strategic direction for the business and systems and processes and operations and financial trajectory. But I don't have any time because everyone is always coming to me with their in the business challenges. And the only reason why people are doing that is because that's what you train them to do. And so that will not only create the feeling of being stuck, it will keep you stuck. So what do we have to do? Well, as it relates to all of the things that keep CEOs stuck, the first thing you have to do is you have to take responsibility. In so many ways, it can be really easy to say, oh, I'm the chief easy button. And the thing that we do instead of taking responsibility is we start to get bitter and resentful of the people that are pressing the easy button. But the thing that I always have to remember is that the reason why they're doing this is because I made this the path of least resistance for every question, problem, and decision. And so once again, we need to take responsibility and we need to say, okay, we're going to do new things to get new results. And so the first thing I want you to focus on is role clarity. These are two words that I think so often CEOs and by extension their businesses totally neglect. And I think, man, if you just spend a little bit of time focusing on role clarity, it would dramatically improve both the efficiency and effectiveness of your organization. It's why when we coach business leaders through the 12 fundamentals of healthy growth, one of the things that we hammer home in those 12 fundamentals, if they're going to grow their business in a healthy way, is these two words, role clarity. And so what I want you to do is to empower your team with the necessary boundaries, information, and knowledge to make good decisions. And so often people don't feel like they can make decisions or take actions because they don't know where their role starts and where other people's role ends. They don't understand the scope of their authority. They don't understand which decisions and actions you've actually delegated to them. And the reason why they don't understand is because it's never been clarified and it's certainly never been documented. And so what we want people to understand is, what is my scope of authority? What is the umbrella under which I am empowered to take actions, make decisions, and solve problems? And then whenever people come to you for you to be the easy button, whether it's related to a decision they're supposed to make or a problem they're supposed to solve or an action they're contemplating taking, when they come to you, here's what I want you to do. I want you to resist the urge to give them the answer or to solve the problem. And instead of giving them the answer, I rather want you to engage in a coaching conversation. And what does every great coach know? Well, we talk about this all the time in this podcast. Good leaders give answers to people. Great leaders and great coaches extract answers from people. And so instead of just saying, oh, well, that's your problem, here's your answer, rather I would challenge you to give them confidence by asking them questions that helps them realize, man, they've got an answer. There's an incredibly practical tactic in the book, Turn the Ship Around by David Marquette, that is something that we could all apply to our businesses. David Marquette was the captain of a submarine. And one of the things that he realized is, man, if I'm going to turn around this nuclear submarine because the culture was messed up, the processes and operations were really screwed up. It was one of the worst performing submarines in the United States Navy. He realized, man, I can't be the bottleneck on every decision, action, and problem that needs to be solved. And so one of the things that he trained his team to do, he said, whenever you come to me with a request for something, I don't want you to ask me. What I want you to do is I want you to present me with the decision or the problem or the question, and then I want you to give me your proposed answer. And I want you really to phrase it like this. The problem is this, I intend to blank. And what's so cool is that as he started to train his team, like, I want you to always come to me with a proposed solution of what you intend to do. They started doing that. And he said, it was almost like over the course of a period of time, you started to see the number of questions and problems and decisions that they were coming to him about get less and less. Why? Because they started to actually trust their instincts and gain confidence in their ability to solve problems, make decisions, and take action. And so I guarantee it, sometime this week, if you've been operating as the chief easy button, someone's going to come to you and they're going to say, hey, can you tell me what I should do in this situation? And you're going to start saying something and then you're going to bite your tongue. And then you're going to ask them, okay, well, instead of me giving you the answer, I'd love to know, what do you intend to do? And maybe they'll give you an answer. And there's a pretty high likelihood, because they've never been put in a position where they have to figure this out on their own, they might be wrong and they might come up with a bad idea. And here's what I want to challenge you to do. Don't immediately just say that's wrong. I want to challenge you to ask questions that help them evaluate the validity of their chosen path. And what you'll see is that if instead of being people's hero, you start to be their coach, you'll invest your time in developing them and they'll need you less and less. And so if you find yourself stuck because you're being the easy button, I want you to adopt that I intend to tactic and challenge your team to solve problems, make decisions, and take action in their scope of authority. Okay, let's go to number three. The third thing that keeps CEOs stuck, and this is a big one. You haven't been on an actual vacation in over a year. When's the last time you went on a vacation? And maybe we should rephrase that in alignment with the statement. When's the last time you went on an actual vacation? To that, you may ask, okay, well, what is an actual vacation? And here's what I would tell you I'm using to define actual vacation. Number one, healthy. Number two, life-giving. Number three, restorative. Healthy, life-giving, and restorative. So often we coincide with CEOs that you ask them when they went on their last vacation and they're like, oh, well, we went on two vacations over the course of the last year. One of them was the family trip to Disney with all four kids. And then the second one was a 3-week RV trip that we did over the summer. And if you ask them, okay, how did you feel on the back end of both of those quote unquote vacations? They'll say, I felt really exhausted. Now, don't hear what I'm not saying. I think Disney World with your family is awesome. And I think you should do that. I think that's a really good thing. I think the RV trip is awesome. And I think you should do that. And I think that's a really good thing if that's what you get into. Just don't call it an actual vacation that's healthy, life-giving, and restorative. And recognize that if it doesn't scratch that itch of healthy, life-giving, and restorative, then man, you should probably plan an additional actual vacation. Because You need time as a CEO to recharge the batteries. You need time as a CEO to look at your business as an opportunity and as a blessing instead of an obligation and a burden. You need time as a CEO to get away and just breathe a little bit. And so often the things we call vacations aren't actually healthy, life-giving, and restorative. That doesn't mean that they're bad things to do. I think you should do all of those things. It just means that as CEO of a business, you've taken on an incredible amount of responsibility, and you have to have times scheduled throughout your year where you're taking a deep breath and hitting the reset button, where you're being reminded of what matters, where you're coming back to center of who you were created to be, where you're getting to invest meaningful eye-to-eye time with your spouse. And so this could look really simple. It could look like a weekend away at a hotel that's in the town that you live in, right? It could look like one night away where you just get a babysitter for one night or have a family member come stay over at the house to watch the kids. But then what you need to do is you need to ask yourself, if we've got this night or if we've got this weekend, how could we organize this weekend in such a way that it was healthy, number one, life-giving, number two, and restorative? Because what that often means is that our outcomes, healthy, life-giving, and restorative, are going to change our strategy. They're going to change our schedule. They're going to change our itinerary, and they're going to change our tactics. And the goal there is that we would slow down, that we would practice presence, and that we would be able to take a deep breath. And you may say, well, I'm just don't have time to do that right now. And I would tell you, if this is the thing that's keeping you stuck, you don't have time not to do it. Because if you're approaching everything in your life right now, your parenting, your marriage, your business, your intellectual life, your personal growth, your health, at a 50% level, then man, if you just took one weekend that would help get you to even 90% in all of those areas, you'd make up the weekend in no time at all. And so don't fall for the lie that you have to stay stuck. Just be intentional about scheduling out a vacation. I would challenge all of you, even if this isn't the one you're struggling with right now, I would look ahead at the next year and just think to yourself, when's our next vacation that's healthy, life-giving, and restorative? And make sure that you've got it on the books for you and your spouse. Okay, let's go to number four. Your input stream is unhealthy, stale, or non-existent. It was Rob Wall that said on this podcast a long time ago, he said, if your output exceeds your input, then your upkeep will be your downfall. I love that. I'm going to say it again. If your output exceeds your input, then your upkeep will be your downfall. I'm sure you agree with this. Leadership is service, right? What is service? Service is pouring yourself out in the best interest of others. So leadership is service. Service is pouring yourself out in the best interest of others. That means that leadership is pouring yourself out. Now, if your job is to pour yourself out and you don't have a defined strategy for intake, you're going to fall apart. You're going to burn out. It's unsustainable and unhealthy. And so one of the things that will often keep leaders stuck is that their input stream, their way of taking in inspiration and content and learning and growth, it's unhealthy, it's stale, or it's non-existent. Let's work these backwards. Number one is it's non-existent. Let me ask you a question. What's your input stream? And if you can't tell me about the new things that you're learning, the new things that you're reading, the areas where you're finding inspiration, right? If you can't tell me about where you're going to acquire new knowledge and to grow your understanding of the world around you and the way that you can steward and manage the blessings that you've been given, if it's non-existent, then man, you've got such an opportunity there, but no wonder you feel stuck, right? Now, I want to address something here. I've reached periods of time where my input stream was non-existent. And the reason why it became non-existent was because it started to feel like a chore, where I didn't want to read books because it felt like a chore. I didn't want to listen to podcasts because it felt like a chore. I wasn't having super challenging and intellectually stimulating conversations because it felt like a chore. And what I had to do in that situation was refer back to thing number three that we just talked about. I had to go on a vacation because I hadn't rested in a long time. And as a result, the things that I actually love, which are learning and growth, they started to feel like obligations and they started to feel like burden. What was crazy is I went on a vacation, I hit the reset button, I took a deep breath, I didn't intake anything for like 9 days, and I came back and I was more excited, enthusiastic, and engaged in learning than I've been in a long time. And so if it's non-existent because it's starting to feel like a chore, go get some intentional rest and don't be surprised when you come back excited about re-engaging with your input stream. Okay, number two, it might be stale. I've also recognized this in my life where I start to feel stuck as a leader. And I kind of think that's weird because I'm like, well, I'm learning and growing a lot, right? I'm listening to a lot of podcasts. I'm reading a lot of books. I'm having a lot of conversations. But then if you ask me, okay, what's the stuff you're listening to and how does it compare to 2 years ago? I'd say it's the exact same, right? I'm listening to the same voices. I'm reading the same authors and I'm having the same conversations that I was 2 years ago. And it's like, oh, no wonder I'm stuck. Sometimes there's value to changing the voices you're listening to, changing the authors that you're reading, changing the topics that you're learning about. Because, man, if you only learn and focus on one perspective and one voice and one topic, well, then you're going to get stale because you've narrowed your vision to such a degree that you're only seeing one perspective. And so what I would challenge you to do is if it's stale, you need to broaden your perspective and say, I'm going to start listening to things that are new and that are different. I'm going to start talking about things that are new and different. I'm going to start reading things that are new and different. And I want you to know, for a while, that's going to feel uncomfortable. For a while, you're going to be like, I love the podcast I used to listen to every Tuesday, and this one doesn't feel as good because it's unfamiliar. It feels uncomfortable to listen to this person. That's the point, right? Growth and discomfort always go together, and growth and comfort never coexist, right? And so the fact that it's unfamiliar might actually be a sign that you're growing, right? It might actually be a sign that you're getting exposed to new information. And so one of the reasons why you're stale is because you've dug this trench that you're comfortable in, and now you're stuck in it. And so what we're doing is by nature, we're inducing some discomfort. And then finally, it could be that you've got an input stream. It could be that you're not necessarily stale. It could just be unhealthy. What if the ideas, concepts, topics, subjects that you're putting into your mind aren't actually in your best interest, right? And certainly there's a spectrum to this, right? There, on one end of the spectrum, it's like you might be watching crap on Netflix or HBO or you choose, right? Or just reading stuff that isn't very good, right? And we know, like, if you put that stuff in, you shouldn't expect gold to come out, right? Like, if you put trash in your mind, don't be surprised when trash comes out, right? And don't be surprised whenever you start to feel stuck, because what we want is content that's invigorating, that's inspirational, that's exciting, that's engaging, that's empowering. And if you're not taking that in, well, then we shouldn't expect to act inspired, right? But it's not always just toxicity. I will tell you, there's a lot of stuff in the business and leadership space that's actually disempowering and unhelpful. Right, there's a lot of stuff in the business, leadership, personal growth space out there that, if we're being honest, it's just trash, because what it represents is selfish improvement, right? It's just all this me getting better for the sake of me getting better and then making sure all of you know about it. It's growth for the sake of growth. And man, if you spend too much time listening to that stuff, it just, you start to compare, you start to think less of yourself, you start to not feel inspired, or you start to have poor motives for the way you're growing yourself or growing your business. And then you'll start to feel stuck, because all of those strategies ultimately result not in an abundance of fulfillment, but rather in a lack of fulfillment, because they're all meaningless. And so evaluate your input stream. Number one, does it exist? Number two, is it stale? But then number three, is it unhealthy, right? Do you need to maybe revamp the health and revamp the standard for the truths that you're allowing into your mind and into your heart? So what I would tell you to do as an action is, number one, audit your inputs. And then number two, if you don't like what's coming out of you, you're feeling stuck, then change what you're taking in. Finally, let's move to the fifth thing that keeps CEOs stuck. You don't have a vision for what unstuck is. If you've been in this rut or in this slump for a while, if you've been experiencing a lack of momentum for a while, it can be really easy to adopt a toxic mindset. And that mindset looks something like this. Well, this is just the way it is, right? This is just the way it is to be a CEO. This is just the way it is to be a leader. This is just the way that it is to be me now. And what you're saying is, this is my new normal. I just feel tired. I feel exhausted. I don't experience wins. My business is in a blessing. And in that position, you've stopped resisting the status quo and you've accepted complacency. Well, if this is you, I just want you to know this is not normal and it doesn't have to be this way, and that it's possible for you to be engaged and excited and encouraged about the work that you're doing, about the way that you relate to your business, about the life that you get to live. It's absolutely possible for you to be treating business and leadership and life as this adventure that you get to be on, that you're engaged in, and you feel like it has a great deal of meaning imbued into it. That's absolutely possible. And I really believe that for you. But honestly, my belief for that in you is nice, but irrelevant. Do you believe it? Because if you believe that today is the best it will ever be, then in a really sad way, you're probably actually right. But the minute you start to say, okay, it's possible that it could be better than this. It's possible that, man, my marriage could be passionate again and engaged again and healthy again. It's possible that I could be the type of mom or dad that I really want to be. It's possible that I could be a business owner that isn't burdened by my business, but rather owns my business as an asset and empowers a team to do great work with an incredible amount of meaning and beauty. It's possible. You got to believe that it's possible, because if you believe that it's possible, then you'll do the work to start making it happen. And man, if you're stuck right now because you don't have a vision that it's possible for things to be better, I have one action item for you. Get around other CEOs that have done it. Because what's crazy is if you spend time around other CEOs that it's like, man, they own their business. They don't run their business. And man, they're the type of parents that I would actually like to be. And oh my goodness, they have the type of marriage that I would like for me and my spouse to have. If you start spending time around those people, it will build your belief. And you'll start to realize, oh, those people, they're not these anomalies. They're not these unicorns. They're not these people that it's just like, holy cow, they're superheroes and I'll never be able to be them. They're like real human beings. And if they can do it, you'll start to have this crazy thought. You'll start to say, maybe I can do it. And I always start to think of that line. So you're saying there's a chance. And the minute you start to have this spark, this inspiration, this belief that it's possible for you, that you have a vision for what unstuck looks like as it relates to your business, your leadership, and your life, well, that's the moment that you'll start actually taking steps to move forward. And so what's the action here? Define the area that you're stuck, and then look for people that are not stuck in that area, and then go spend time around them. Because it's crazy, as you spend time around them, what you'll start to see happen is that your eyes will lift above the horizon, and you'll start to say, okay, there's things that I could do to get the same results that they're getting. Success leaves clues, and I don't have to be stuck. I can choose to do different things to get different results. Okay, let's review the five. And I just want you, out of reviewing these five, to identify the one that you're going to focus on and then take intentional action to move forward. Five things that keep CEOs stuck. Number one, you're being held hostage by your team. Number two, you aren't the CEO, you're the chief easy button. Number three, you haven't been on an actual vacation in over a year. Number four, your input stream is unhealthy, stale, or non-existent. Number five, you don't have a vision for what unstuck is. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to define the thing that's keeping you stuck, and I want you to name it, and then I want you to resolve to take new actions to get new results. Y'all, I hope that this was valuable for you. You know this. We're rooting for you. We're praying for you. We want to see you win. Remember, my strength is not for me. Your strength is not for you. Our strength is for service. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.